The following announcement has been paid for by Perched on the Top Rope.
Hey, this is David Penzer, and you're watching Perched on the Top Rope.
Welcome, everyone, to Perched on the Top Rope. As you heard from that show opener today, we have former WCW, XWF, TNA, Impact Wrestling, ring announcer David Penzer. David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Oh, absolutely. I am doing fantastic. Now, I have read and have a copy of Ringside Volume 1. I have already purchased a hard copy of Sitting Ringside Volume 2. The first book was so incredible, David. And
I appreciate that.
You're welcome. What I love, not just about the book, but you guys can... I'll have the links in the description. People can order it on Amazon.com. They can also go to GuyEvansBooks.com. And there, you can get more bang for your buck because Sitting Ringside Volume 2, you guys have offered such incredible packages for the fans. If you go to GuyEvansBooks.com, you can get the book autographed by yourself, Guy Evans. You can get all sorts of, from the different bundles, stuff from, rare stuff from TNA, rare stuff from XWF, and signed items, posters and formats and even the bigger packages. You can even get a Zoom call with you and Guy. Now, how did you guys come up with, these different packages for the fans?
Well, Guy would put them past me and see what I thought. And I always go with, he's great at what he does. And I always go with him. And there are some really, really, really cool things that are available. I was just doing another podcast and I said to the fans, if you like inside baseball, inside wrestling, if you click on the link to see who the producers were for Raw every man. That's baby. That's nothing compared to what you get in these books. And as far as hundreds and hundreds of pages of bonus stuff, not only do you get the agents for some of these legendary shows from early 1990s WCW stuff, you get the inside everything, the production notes and the direction and like an outline of what they want guys. So the XWF business plan, Ric Flair's last match, complete format. It's a treasure trove of a lot of very super cool things. And then you can hear my story also, but I'd vote for the bonus stuff.
Yeah. The bonus stuff is really, really cool stuff. And I've already ordered a hard copy, but I'm going to be ordering another copy just for that bonus stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, it really is. Now, when it came to the forwards in Volume 1, Kevin Sullivan was your forward, and then in Volume 2 you had Mike Tenay. So what did it mean for you to have, Kevin and Mike, essentially, give a great forward for both books?
Oh, it meant the world. I'd have tremendous respect for both of those people. Both of those people helped me out tremendously. I didn't think Mike had to do it. And, he sort of kept low, but he did. And he did an incredible, one of the funny stories probably in WCW history, with Mean Gene and me and Bobby Heenan and Mike. And told that story and just was really classy. And, of course, Kevin passed soon after, but, made it mean even more to me that he would go out of his way, when things were going great in his life health wise to put me over. And just incredible. I couldn't have asked for two better people. Some people have Hulk Hogan or, Bret Hart, and look, those are incredible people. But when it comes to writing the forward, I don't think it's who's the most famous. I think it's who's the most that you have in common with the story that you're telling. And it came down to Kevin for Volume 1 and Mike Tenay for Volume 2. So I'm blessed.
Yeah, very, very incredible. I loved Kevin's, and I can't wait to read Mike's in the book. What was your experience like being able to work with Guy Evans on volume one and two, and how did you guys hook up to be able to do the two volumes for Sitting Ringside?
It's so funny because I was looking at Twitter before I jumped on, and somebody liked the original post that made all this happen. I don't know how they found it. It went way back, but basically, I was cleaning out my my office, and I found all these cool formats and business plans and internal memos, and I had kept them for whatever reason. So I put the couple of pages of what they were and said, any ideas what to do with this, guys? I might be the only one who has these now, still. And a couple hours later, Guy Evans reached out to me and said, hey, let's talk tomorrow. I have an idea. And boom, that's how it went. And Guy's the best there is as far as professional wrestling writers. And he did an amazing job telling my story and telling my memories and experiences and opinions. And so yeah, it's been great. We've become friends and have the utmost respect for him. And there's not much he could tell me to do as far as the book business, and I would question him on. It's yes, sir. What if you think that's appropriate, then that's what we're gonna do.
Well, that's incredible. I was very excited to see volume two come out after, having already had volume one, to see that, all that pop up. I was very, very excited. Because if fans, if you've read volume one, you were anticipating volume two. I couldn't put the book down, David. I read volume one in 2 days.
Wow,
Yeah,
that's faster than I read.
I couldn't put it down. I literally 2 days. I read it in 2 days. I had the e-copy and I have the hard copy. Read the e-copy 2 days. 2 days. I
Thank you.
absolutely loved it.
I'm honored. It's a little different, it's a different, a little different style than a lot of the books, and it's my journey's kind of unique in a lot of ways. And the first book was, as me trying to live my dream and the impossibility of it at the time and pulling it off, until WCW went out of business after working so hard to work my way up the ranks. And then I think volume two is even more interesting because it's all right, how does somebody who worked so hard, who overcame so many obstacles, who got that opportunity, and then it all went away? How does he stay in this business that he loves so much? There wasn't another wrestling company. It was WWE. That was it. There were no indie shows like there are now, where they fly in 12 people. Back then, if you're at an indie show, they would use the local talent. So say I use Atlanta, for example. So if back then, after WCW went out of business, you might use a Buff Bagwell, a Disco Inferno, a Tommy Rich, or Wrestling 2 as a legend, and then fill it out with local guys. The idea to fly somebody in 2001 to an indie show was pretty much not even thought about. So the whole market has changed now. They have these mega indie shows where they've all these big stars fly in from all these different promotions, and I think that's great. But they didn't have that back then. There were no fan fests, really. So it's a lot more opportunities today than there was back then. So does a guy like me, who could do a little bit of everything and has a pretty good reputation, but there's really nothing out there, how do I string that along to be able to make a living still doing this? And that's the fun part of volume two, I think.
Yeah, and you get to see that journey. And I'm so glad you brought up when WCW had closed down, because in 2001 you were part of the XWF, and I have to ask, that had only lasted about a year, and then in 2002 we see TNA and Ring of Honor. Do you think if XWF didn't fold, do you still think we would have saw Ring of Honor and TNA become a thing?
I can't speak for Ring of Honor. I can't speak for TNA. I will tell you that, and it goes into great detail in the book, but me and Jeff communicated throughout those days, never telling any, never stooging anything off, but because we both wanted to try to be number two. And so, he would ask how we were doing, have we heard from any television executives, how are the tapings go? And, he would say, look, I got this thing coming up. We're going to try pay-per-view every week. I don't know if it's going to work out. And so I don't want to give away too much, but I remember when we found out that XWF was done, and I went to the we where our offices were in the on the Bay, Tampa Bay, overlooking, and I went to the roof of the building and I called Jeff and I said, well, I'll tag in you in because we're done. And how crazy is it that all this time later they're still alive and kicking and doing their thing and setting records and working with the WWE and NXT? It's crazy, and I'm so glad for them. Who knows what could have happened if XWF had a little bit more money to keep it rolling, but they didn't see. And look, I don't blame them, and it's not a money thing. When WCW Nitro was canceled, it was still a top 10 cable television show. Now the company was imploding and losing money, but it was still a top 10 cable television show. So if you're a television executive and you see that they canceled a top 10 show for no real reason, because you don't have to get involved in, oh, it's a cluster muck, and there's too many egos. No, TV execs don't care about that. That's what happened in TV. TV, everybody had egos. So so they just want to know, why would you cancel a top 10 show? And there was no good answer. And so when there was no good answer, they were like, well, why should we take it? Because obviously there's something wrong there, that dysfunction or whatever, that we don't need. So, I don't blame them for not picking up the show. I think a couple of years later, maybe if we waited, I think we might have had a shot, a good shot. But it was, it was a little too soon. I think there were still a lot of people going, I don't, something doesn't make sense about canceling that show. So I don't want to take a chance.
I'm glad you brought it up, and I can't wait to read about it in Sitting Ringside Volume 2. You brought up the relationship between WWE and TNA that just happened. What are your thoughts on that new multi-year deal that they both inked together? And what do you think about TNA has announced that the TNA Genesis pay-per-view is now going to be a crossover with the NXT brand this weekend?
Oh, well, darn, I might have to buy it now. I didn't hear that part. I'm super excited for everybody. It's not just business. It means stuff. It means stuff to people. It means stuff for a Trey Miguel and a Zachary Wentz to be able to go back and reform the Rascals. I mean, that's important to them. I mean, these guys grew up watching the business as fans. To them, yeah, you got to make a living, but it's about getting to do, winning titles you saw your idols win, getting to reform this team that got them, notoriety. And I guarantee, I know for a fact that the emotion that was in that when they got back together was real. I know that people like Jordynne Grace, to defend her title and the main event of NXT of NXT show, that's important to her. So this isn't just, a lot of it is business, and it's great for the business. It's great for both companies. If you think about it, between Impact, TNA Impact, and NXT, it's 4 hours of television. If you take away the commercial time, it's about 3 hours of television, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. So there's a lot of people in both those promotions that every week you got to put 3 hours, to try to tell all their stories. So this is a natural progression of two companies that have young stars that need to go out and see, be in other companies and have other experiences, and to get ready for their call up to the big show when it happens. And it used to be that they'd send them down to Memphis. Well, in the old days, well, there ain't no Memphis. So this is the next, really the next, in my mind, the next Memphis, so to speak. But I'm happy for everybody. I'm happy for the talent. I'm happy. And on the inverse, for I forget her gimmick name, but for Santino's daughter to be able to come in and work with her dad, I'm sure that's memories that they never thought they would have, and they're going to cherish forever. So it works both ways. And I'm super excited for everybody involved. I can't wait to see what happens. I saw Jordynne Grace put on Twitter today. Bookmark this: Ultimate X will be at WrestleMania. Did you see that?
I did see that. I did see that.
So, I was thinking about that a little further, and that's crazy. But I think it would be incredible, and I think it would be. I mean, it would. I think it's in some ways the crossover makes absolutely no sense if you only think of it as WWE. But if you think of it as NXT and they're young guys, and look, TNA, we have veterans, but it's mostly about young people, getting their chance, getting their opportunity, and that's just their business model. It kind of always has been, going back to AJ Styles. So I'm as if you can't tell, I'm really excited, but I'm more excited as for them. I'm excited as a fan to see where this goes.
Yeah, as a fan, this is a great time to be a professional wrestling fan. And the other thing I wanted to bring up was Scott D'Amore was actually recently backstage at AEW Dynamite. Could you see Scott going to work for AEW?
I don't know about AEW, but I see Scott going to work for a major promotion, whether it be NXT or WWE or Scott's incredibly smart, incredibly smart when it comes to the wrestling business, has so much to offer on so many levels. Well, in TNA and Impact Wrestling, look, WWE and AEW, they have different departments. They have a production department that's led by VP of production. They have a talent relations department. They have a creative department. They have a travel department. Basically, all things in Impact Wrestling ran through Scott D'Amore. So he offers so many different things to a wrestling promotion that one person normally wouldn't offer. And part of me surprised he hasn't done it sooner. I know he wanted to work on the Maple Leaf Wrestling, and I hope he does well with that. But I'll tell you, people would if somebody doesn't hire Scott D'Amore, they're really missing out on an incredible opportunity of somebody who offers something that I don't think any I can't think of anybody else in the business right now offers as far as how much he's done in all those different departments.
Yeah, I mean that man has worn multiple hats throughout his entire career, and I think any company would be lucky to have Scott.
Oh, 100%, 1,000%. I was the one who got him his first WCW match, and then he gave me the send off last year. Will always be one of the honors of my life to have the peers, your peers, and the fans, chanting thank you pins, are holding a plaque that's still up in front of in my office as today. And none of that I knew about. And he didn't have to do that. He didn't even have to bring me to that pay-per-view. Normally, I wouldn't go to a one-off pay-per-view like that. They'd had Jade do it, who was there. So, he didn't have to do any of that, but he did. And to me, it's probably, probably the highlight of an incredible career. Because, to be most people don't get a chance unless they go into a Hall of Fame. To be able to get a send off like that. And so I'm very blessed, and it gets me emotional every time I talk about it.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about some of your favorite highlights, because you had three different times being in TNA, and I was actually going to ask if that was like one of the more, or if not the most memorable moment for you. But one of the moments I wanted to bring up was the angle you had with Kurt Angle back in 2008, where you were actually legitimately injured. How did that whole angle come up, and who brought it up to you to essentially have Kurt Angle attack you?
Well, I wasn't brought up. It was on the format, and I did it. And we go in that there's a whole chapter in there about that
Okay.
whole thing. And And but just an overview. I was running a very successful airbrush tattoo company. We were the first to really dive into airbrush tattoos and theme parks and zoos, aquariums, cruise ships, all that. It was highly successful. So as part of my deal to come back, if I needed to come late or whatever, I could come late. So it just so happened we were doing a trade show that week in Orlando. So I didn't get there till around 5 o'clock. I missed the production meeting. And I get there at 5 o'clock and they say, "All right, you're going to get beat up by Kurt." And so we go over it a little bit. I knew what he was going to do. And I knew he was a shooter. I think that he, and Jeff has talked about it on his podcast and Kurt has talked about it before. I think that he was afraid. I know that he was afraid that I wouldn't sell it right. So he stiffed it a little bit. And I'm not mad about it. What am I going to do? Beat him up? Quit the company? It is what it is. So was I happy about it? No. But I got a $500 bonus, so that was nice. It is what it is. And perhaps if I had been there the whole day and we could have really got into it and practiced it, maybe he would have felt a little better. But I know he feels horrible about it, and I accept his apology. And every time I see him, he's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." And I'm like, "Don't even bring it up." But I still think if it happened tomorrow, he would do the same thing, because he takes his wrestling so seriously that I think that he would do the same thing. And there was no malice intended. He just wanted to make sure the shit got over. So yeah, but there's pictures of before and after. Ooh, I didn't look good.
Oh yeah, I can't imagine having a Kurt Angle, in his prime like that. Yeah, that's pretty rough. Speaking of TNA, with your send off that you got in 2023, did you look at the send off with Jade Chung being your replacement? Did you look at that as like a passing of the torch event in any sort of way?
100%, 100%. Scott pulled me over around June, and of 2023, and he said, "I just want you to know that I wanted you to find out before we had our production meeting that Jen is going to do like the pre-show matches. I forget what they called it at the time. It was a secondary show, and so all right. Well, I said to him, I said, Does I have to worry about that?" And he was like, "Well, no, not for now, but you can't do this forever." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right. I can't do it forever." So I said, "Just so I don't, not sleep at night worrying about it, because I'd rather know what's going on now and plan for it than be surprised. How long do you think I got?" He said, "Till the end of the year, I think." Well, what I didn't know at the time is he was planning on doing the TNA reveal. And as part of that TNA reveal, he wanted to have a younger, much better looking, announcer. And I totally understood it. So, but I made it my mission at the time. I remember going back and talking to my wife, like, I could not help her, but Gary Capetta helped me, and it was time. And so I just said everything, and we talk about this in the book, everything I could do to help her in any way I could. I told her, "I want you to succeed. If you succeed, then I succeed." And it was great. And I'm a little disappointed that she's not there anymore. I'm sure that some of that has to do with her husband, but God bless her. It wasn't that was in her comfort zone, and she took it as a challenge, and she made a great deal with it. And yeah, I am proud that I passed the mic to her, so to speak.
I was actually going to ask about that. What were your thoughts when you found out that she was going to be departing from the company?
Well, I figured that Josh was going to explore his options. I think he's still under contract, so I don't think he could do anything now. But I would think that without Scott there, for loyalty that exists, at that point, you say, well, hey, I'm not getting any old younger. You know, what else is out there and what they might be interested in me doing. So I have no inside info on that. I mean, you know, I noticed he stopped doing these shows. So, you know, my gut tells me he's going somewhere. But you know, that could be conjecture. You could go get a construction job and just get a walk away from the business. I don't know. Doesn't make sense to me, but anything's possible. But yeah, so I think that based on knowing that he was going to be doing something else, and you know, the fact is that you know, they would bring Jet and sometimes their older son to the matches. Jet, the most adorable kid I've ever met, huge wrestling fan, just enamored with it. And so when she was out ringing out, you know, Josh would watch her him. And when she was when you know and when he was out wrestling, she was out ring announcing, you know, all those women in that knockouts division locker room are, you know, as tight as could be. But it gets to the point where if Josh isn't going to be here and I bring Jet, you know, do I really want to ask somebody to take 2 hours out, 2 or 3 hours out of their night to watch my son? I don't know that that was a big part about it, but I think that you know, I think that might have played into it. I've had no communication with her other than wishing her the best on Twitter. So, you know, I'm sure they have to keep their head down now and, you know, finish up, have Josh finish up. I think Sunday he's doing an I Quit match with Mike Santana. I would assume he will quit and then go explore. But again, I have no inside information about that. Like I said, for all I know, he became a vice president of a marketing company that has nothing to do with professional wrestling.
Yeah, I
But
mean,
that's not my gut.
anything's possible. You know, with the relationship now with WWE and TNA, specifically because it's NXT, with these crossover pay-per-views, if TNA called, would you love to be a ring announcer for a night on one of these pay-per-views that they do?
Oh, I'd love to do it for a night, sure. I don't know that I'm going to do the, you know, I the travel is just brutal. You know, there's a lot I miss about being involved in the wrestling business on a, you know, in a promotion and being, you know, going to every show and following the storylines and getting to know the people and, you know, caring about them and becoming friends. And, you know, that I miss a lot. The travel is not something that I miss. I was miserable the last couple of years in Impact. Now I never thought about quitting because this is what I did. But when I went, but you know, when they did that first pay-per-view last January in Vegas, and my wife, I watched it, and my wife said, "Do you miss it?" I'm like, "No, I really don't." You know, probably I'll miss being at the bar afterwards, hanging with the talent, the guys and girls. But I don't miss, you know, the travel. And there was a personality there, a person there that was very disrespectful to me in my tenure there. And I talk about that in the book as well. Guy was shocked because, you know, I never really, you know, talked bad about anybody before, but I felt that it was important that that information comes out. So I don't know. Some people have guessed who it is, but you know, I just, you know, I think after 30 years, I deserved a little bit more respect than I would have been. So, I didn't miss that, you know. So between that and the travel, it was like, you know what? And then after I found out Scott's not there anymore, it's like, you know what? No, I really don't miss it. You know, I'll be doing some fan fest coming up and, you know, one-off stuff like that. Like I said, a one-off main event show, like for a show, like you know, for Impact or TNA or even NXT would be awesome. I would do that, but I can't. I don't want to do the grind anymore. Plus, I'm really focused on my real estate career. The one thing I noticed is, when I was doing Impact Wrestling, then I stopped. Was it's really hard to be a realtor when you're out of town every other weekend, or a good realtor at least. So I'm really focused, and you know, things are going well, knock on wood. So I think I got to think about, you know, saving money for my retirement instead of going to drink with a bunch of kids who watch me as a ring announcer in TNA. Not that that wasn't fun, by the way.
I am so glad you brought up the real estate aspect of your career after wrestling. I'm in real estate myself as well.
Oh,
And
sorry to hear that.
right, me too. I gotta ask, what is it with people in the professional wrestling industry getting in real estate? It seems like there are, I mean, yourself, Jeff Jarrett, Rick Steiner. I mean, honestly, the list goes on and on. There's more than just the three of you that I just listed off the top of my head. What is
Well,
it?
a lot of it is about making connections, and a lot of it is about, calling. There's a lot of people, probably 99% of the people that I call that I get leads from have no idea what I did in another world, in another lifetime. So they're just, I'm like every other ring announcer that to those people, every other ring announcer, every other realtor, that's bugging them, that's bothering them. So,
Yeah.
I like to think that, I can talk to people. Me and you are having a conversation, and and that's nine tenths of getting the business, is being able to talk to them and getting them to trust you. And I think that.
The game is on the line, and I've only got a shot clock's worth of time to tell you about Subway's $6.99 foot long deal. That's right. Order now in the Subway app and get any foot long on the menu for just $6.99. Fresh sliced deli meat, fresh crispy veggies. Ah, too much good stuff. Get it now on the Subway app. Any foot long for just $6.99. Use code 699FL now. Only here for a limited time. Redeemable at participating U.S. restaurants. Subway app, online orders only. Add-ons, additional plus tax. Additional fees apply on delivery. Excludes foot long snacks. Limited time.
Wrestlers, because of their mentality, people in the wrestling business, because they've talked on a microphone and they've had to tell stories. That's just something that they kind of drift to. And I've had my ups and downs, and like I said, knock on wood, things are going good. But I can't go play wrestling anymore. I got to focus on real life. But so, but what's cool is, I'm going to Ohio in the first weekend of March with a whole bunch of legends, and doing a Q&A with Mick Foley for Big Time Wrestling. And I can never pronounce the city that it's in, but it's Bobby Fulton's company. And
It's Chillicothe.
Chillicothe, is that it? So I'm excited. I'm super excited about that. But then I don't have to worry about 2 weeks later where are we going next. So it's all part of growing up, I guess.
I actually just had Bobby Fulton's son on the other day, and he talked about that show. That's how I knew where it was. March 8th with
Oh, is
Logan.
he the is it are you the one that made, like, he made your show like the number one show that week?
Yeah, that was with him, and I had a
I texted him and I said, "Man, I wish I still had a podcast."
and I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's actually one of the questions I have. With volume one and volume two of Sitting Ringside, the book, coming out, would you ever consider bringing back the Sitting Ringside podcast?
I might on a limited basis. It got so difficult at the end, but everybody had, you have to go through, first of all, a lot of what who I interviewed were legends, and a lot of the legends are, starting to lose their memory, and towards and there was like time, there was a couple guys that I have so much respect for all these people, but we'd have to edit, tell the same story three times and edit the second two out. So those, that group was, so that there was a group of people that I would try to get, indie wrestlers, TNA wrestlers, and AEW wrestlers, and legends, because WWE, other than Ch Charles Robinson, didn't really want to work with me, which is fine. That's fine. But when the legends get crossed off, and then AEW wants you to go through their PR department where they sit on the phone, so that kind of gets halfway crossed off because it's hard to get people. And then TNA, the Impact, they started to want me to give the qu questions in advance to Ross Foreman, which I really annoyed me, actually. That was their new policy for every podcast. And just because I was David Penzer, I had to follow their policy. So then, it's like it's really hard getting talent. At that point, I was kind of burnt out. I would do it on a limited basis for sure. You never know. You never know. I enjoyed it. But
I don't know.
yeah, so I have to listen to that episode with Dylan. Dylan gets a lot of, I don't know, I've never met Dylan before. Everything that every interaction that we've ever had has been up and up.
Yeah, I've had no issue talking with him so far. He's done. I just had him on the other night again about the March 8th show, actually.
Yeah, I mean, people say things about him, and people can say things about a lot of people, but every we text a lot, and PM a lot, and had a few calls, and everything that's happened has so far has everything he's promised so far has happened. So I don't expect anything less. It's a shame that he's walking away, but I understand the frustration. And but I'm glad I get to be a part of that last show that he's doing. And I think he's a good kid, but he's playing with sharks in some ways. And I don't know if you're ready for that at his age, but hey, he's been very successful, so who could say anything different?
I learned just being a vendor, bringing wrestlers into shows, you gotta have thick skin.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You gotta.
No, and I mean, he's been, and financially, he's been incredibly successful. So hey, who am I? Like I said, you treat me right, and I see that you're doing the right things, and that you're making money. Well, then I got no problem until there's a problem, and I don't anticipate there's going to be a problem on this one. But yeah, I think he wears it on the. He wears it. I think he takes it seriously. I don't want to say he shouldn't, but when you go through the wrestling business for 30 years, like his dad, Bobby, I'm sure Bobby's like, who gives a crap? And Dylan's like, no, but this guy screwed me. And he's like, well, welcome to the wrestling business. Welcome to life.
Yeah.
So I see both sides going back and forth, but he wears his heart on his chin. And I wish that he could just, I wish that he could just brush it off, but some people can't, especially younger people. So I think if he had taken a different angle and gotten into this earlier, maybe he would have been able to brush it off, because there's like nothing that anybody could say to piss me off. I don't care. There's literally, unless you're trying to steal my money or mess with my kids, say whatever you want to say. The first real estate brokerage I worked in, they used to have bets, all the realtors, that they finally could come up with something that would piss me off, and that never happened. I don't care. Words are just words. But I understand that to somebody like Dylan, who works his butt off and has done a lot of good things for a lot of people, where he takes it personally. So we'll see. Yeah. I look to you gonna be up there?
So I'm really hoping to make my way there. I'm in Oswego, New York. I'm right on Lake Ontario. Across from me is Ontario, Canada. It's only like 2 hours. But for me to go to Ohio, it's only like a 4 or 5 hour drive. So I'm really working on the time. The issue is I had my hip replaced, and I just had my 6 month checkup, and yesterday I fell on it and did x-rays. I fell hard on ice. So I did x-rays, and Monday I go back to the doctor to find out the damage I did.
So sorry to hear that, man.
I appreciate it. One of the things I also wanted to bring up was, outside of the Sitting Ringside podcast, you were also a regular on Hannibal TV and doing interviews as well. So what was that experience like?
It was fun to be able to see my old friends and talk to them. It was nice to be able to get paid to do it. The man turned out to be insane, and I'm sorry that I have anything to do with him in hindsight.
That is a fair assessment. No, I'm not going to lie there. I've met him once, and you can tell he's had a little too many concussions.
Or drinks.
Or both, yeah. But, I just remember looking in his eyes, and it was like nobody was there. Nobody was home. Really, really weird. It was a really weird thing at that point. One of the things I do want to bring up, and it tends to be like a taboo subject still in professional wrestling 17 years later, and I've read some autobiographies where wrestlers who have worked with Chris Benoit for a lengthy period of time don't mention him in their book at all, just like how WWE was after they had found out what had happened. You didn't shy away about talking about Chris Benoit in not only volume one, but also volume two. And yeah. I just want to know, what was your reasoning for, bringing, having him in the book?
Well, I didn't want to. Still part of me who wishes that I might not have done it. Me and Guy had a long talk about it and thought it was important, because I saw a side of Chris Benoit that almost nobody but a half a dozen people saw. We all as the Steve Regal and his wife, Fit Finley and his wife, Mel, Johnny Grunge and his wife. There was a cameraman who we were all very close to, who was a regular for WCW, and his wife. And we all we were all in the rest of the business, and the wives were friends. And so but when we would have nights off, the group of us would all go to dinner and go, drink and sing karaoke and all that jazz. And so I saw parts of Chris that nobody ever really saw, that he kind of let himself, his guard go down a little bit. And when he realized that we saw what we saw, they pulled away from that group as fast as, anything. And as a matter of fact, when I found out what happened and I saw the home that they were showing on the from the helicopter, they had sold their own home and moved to this big gated, thing. We didn't even know that. Everybody was surprised at what happened. I was surprised they moved. And then later on, Johnny Grunge, God, I love Johnny Grunge and I miss him so much, but he's a lovable screw up. And has a heart of gold. And because he was, sort of a screw up, and because they both knew him at different times and then together, when the shit hit the fan at their house, they would go to talk to him, because he wasn't going to judge them. You know what I mean? How could he judge them when he's, and I say screw up, I mean that with endearment, in terms of endearment. It just is what it was. And what they didn't know is, as soon as Grunge would work out their deal, he would call me and tell me everything that happened. I don't know why. It's not like I called him and said, "Hey, every time you got a scoop on Chris and Nancy, let me know." But he just, I guess he felt like he could confide in me and I would never say anything. And I never did, not even to my wife. And Grunge died. And I think their out, I know that their outlet was gone. I still to this day think for absolute surety that if Johnny Grunge was alive, so would Chris Daniel and Nancy. They lost their outlet and it was going to explode. When I found out what happened, I didn't think for a minute, not even for a second, that it was somebody, anything else but what it turned out to be. I had some insight through grunge and through our experiences as a kind of a husband and wife, social group, of things that even his close friends on the road didn't have insight to. I got bombarded with Dateline NBC and Nancy Grace and all that, and I ran as far away from that as I could. Some of the wrestlers who didn't see it, I remember being on the phone with Jericho for like hours trying to explain. He just couldn't see it. He couldn't understand it. Even though I would tell him what I saw, he didn't see it, because Chris wasn't like that with him. I mean, the guy, say what you will about him, and I got nothing good to say about him. He was great at hiding his dark side. It wasn't good enough, but it was, to where a few of us had an inclination, but he was very good. And it sucks. And but I thought that since I had insight on the story, that it would be appropriate for people that are going to spend their hard money to buy this book to give them the insight that I had.
Well, I for one appreciate it because I had read all of it, and there was a lot there that I didn't know. I don't think that fans know, and I personally want to thank you for including it because it does paint a different limelight, and it just goes to show because you lived through it and watched it. We get to see everything from a different set of eyes that nobody knew about, or nobody, aside from you and a few others saw, but there's nothing out there. So I do appreciate you writing about it. I really do. As much as you didn't want to.
I just told the story. I just told my memories, and Guy wrote about it. So, and that's what me and him have such a great relationship with. I just I don't get involved in him writing the stories. He asks me questions, he records them, and when he has all the info he needs, he crafts the story together. And quite frankly, I've gotten a lot of lucky breaks in my wrestling, lifetime. And I don't know that finding Guy Evans and having him do these books for me wasn't maybe the one of the luckiest things that I've had happen.
Incredibly well written, and just that part alone that I had read, like I said, it was incredible. Granted what it was about for what I read with being Chris Benoit, I'm somebody, David, who personally I cannot separate the man from the character that we watched on TV. I can't do that. Just like I can't do it with O.J. Simpson, just like I can't do it with Michael Vick, as much as people, with Michael Vick, oh, he's a changed man. I'm an animal lover. I don't care. No, that he's sorry because he got caught, and that's my opinion. And a lot of people tend to
Oh, but
focus more.
OJ didn't do it. He got found innocent.
Yeah. But we all know the truth there.
I'm not defending what Michael Vick did it in any way, shape, or form. I think it's horrible, but I won a lot of fantasy championships with that guy at the helm. So there's a small part of me that a piece of my heart that has a lot of love for him.
When it comes to that making money, I can't fault anybody for that. I'm somebody who has a hard time, especially in the, like with the wrestling world, with what Benoit did, because that is an unforgiving act.
Oh, it's
Completely
despicable.
unforgiven.
There
And
aren't enough verbs to list.
yeah, no, there's not. And a lot of them would be bleeped out at this point. There'd be a lot of words bleeped out in regards to that. Now, a lot of people tend to focus on Chris because he was the big name of, WWE, WCW. He was really secluded from what I understand. And even when you looked at the house, it was so set back from the gate. And I'm sure that there were security cameras up the wazoo. Was Nancy a secluded person, or was she more of a, extrovert wanting to be out and about and be around people?
Oh, the latter for sure. The latter for sure. And you could tell he wasn't like that. And so that was the push and pull of our experiences with him in a social situation where Nancy wanted to, just have fun and be with her friends. And Chris was sort of pulling back a little bit and wasn't happy about it. And so, yeah, there was, it was, look, I knew Nancy when I drove with Nancy and Kevin when they were married. And so, Nancy was a tough girl. Nancy wasn't one that, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, Chris, I'm never going to do this again. Nancy, if she felt strongly about something, she was going to stick up for herself. I'm not in any way, just for the record, saying that she's to blame in any way, shape, or form for what happened. I'm just telling you that, look, she could hold her own. She wasn't a demure person. And, it just, looking back, it was just doomed to fail. I never thought it would happen, but as soon as it happened, I knew it happened. If you think, if, not like I would hang up the phone with Grunge and say, oh, this is gonna end bad. I figured they'd get divorced or something, but he had gotten divorced before from his first wife, and it wasn't like, he didn't kill her. So I didn't never imagine that until it happened, and then, like I said, I knew it happened. And it's such a shame. Such a
Oh, it really
shame.
is. It really is. It's definitely an event that should have never have taken place. And
Yeah.
especially when you start thinking, for her and her son, should have never have happened. Now, I want to change topics because I'm like, even just like I'm getting a little upset over here myself, because I can't separate character from person with that. When it comes to volume two, what is the biggest takeaway that you want fans that are going to read the book? What is the biggest takeaway for you, and their experience with the book.
That's a really good question. I've never been asked that before. Kudos. I think somebody who loved the business was desperate to be a part of it and so happy when he was able to be a part of it. And then, like they say, the waves came crashing into Panama City and that, and it ended. And how a guy who worked so hard to get so far, how to, we noted this in begin the interview a little bit, but how are you going to string together a way to get back in when there really isn't a back in place to go to at the time? So it's just the story of a guy that was constantly working hard and had some good luck, and people like Jimmy Hart in there in my corner, who would include me in everything he did. God bless him. I told him that the other night. And then to be able to, I thought I was done. After that last iteration of TNA, and then to come back during COVID and be able to experience that again, which was so I never thought would happen in a million years, and then to have that send off we talked about. It's an incredible story. There's a lot of people who have incredible stories, and I'm not comparing mine to anybody, but for me, for the things that I grew up wanting to do and the things that I've been able to do in 30 plus years of being around this business, it's you couldn't write something better than the actual experience of it. So I have no regrets. I still love the business, and I'm so honored to have been a part of it, in whatever small way or big way or whatever way I've had in the past 30 years.
Incredible. Thank you for that. David, where can fans find you on social media to interact with you?
I am at David Penzer, all one word on Twitter. I do not talk politics, so we will not get in arguments. Yeah, it's all about, well, not anymore. Sometimes a little fantasy football, a little nostalgia, maybe television and movies and stuff, but 95% of it is pro wrestling. A lot of my memories, I just saw that today is the anniversary. I don't know how, my 2000s, the 25th anniversary, I guess, of the Eddie and Benoit and those guys walking out of WCW. And I was right there. If you read chapter volume one, I was right there in the middle of it, because
Yeah.
I was really good friends with those guys and really good friends with Kevin. And so I'm the only one who like had that connection with all of them, with both sides. So Kevin would send me out to try to talk him down. And then I thought I'd talk them down, and then they get pissed off again. And I'll never forget. I could see their doors were red in that building in Cincinnati where you walked out. There was like a whole, probably six or seven doors that you pushed open. I'll never forget when they walked out. Look, it ended up being good for them, I guess. I thought at the time it was a real, and it was even, even looking back, it was real. Bet on themselves and could have gone the wrong way. It happened to go the right way. But yeah, so seeing that, so I'll probably address that on Twitter today, just since I saw that there's they've been putting up the videos of the next Nitro, and when they stripped them of the tie. I didn't even remember half of this, that Arn Anderson cut like a 10-minute promo at the beginning of Nitro saying that he screwed up as the referee. Yeah, he did a promo at the beginning of Nitro for 10 minutes because he was the guest referee, talking about how he it was his fault. And they held up the title, and and it was crazy. It was I didn't even remember half of that, but I vividly remember them walking out those red doors, and it's crazy. They had to regroup. They had to, talk about TV on the fly, man. They must have walked out around 4:30, 5 o'clock. We were live at 8 o'clock. I'm sure that was one of those nitros where the formats were coming out page by page while the show was on. But it's bittersweet in a lot of ways. I wish they would have stayed, because I'd like to have seen what we could have done with them in a better role. I'm glad for the Chris. I care less about. We've established that, but I'm glad for the other guys that they got an opportunity to live, to make, to prove that they deserved what they were looking to get, and people, certain powers in WCW would allow them to get there. So, hey, they bet on themselves. God bless you.
Yeah.
But that, and the whole reason we talk about it is that's the stuff that I talk about on Twitter. So, you know, if you like the inside stories, when like an anniversary or something comes along, you know, I usually post something and then try to sell the book with it.
Oh, that's incredible. Cause I mean, all those stories, like you said, right here in Volume 1, fans, you can go to amazon.com, and you can also go to guyevansbooks.com.
Yeah. And I told a story in when Netflix, the Raw was on Netflix for the first time, about me reaching out to Jeff Jarrett when I started Global Force Wrestling, and had a conversation with him. And, you know, the first thing, you know, one of the first things you say is, you have anybody from TV interested? I'll never forget, Jeff said, you don't need TV anymore. Streaming is the future. And that was a pretty prophetic thing to say. And so I remember that story as I was turned on, you know, Raw on Netflix. And boy, you know, and I remember thinking at the time, and I put this in the post, you know, streaming, people are going to like sit on their computers and stream a wrestling show. That's stupid. But that's what they do now. And that's what the world's come to. And you know what? I learned a very valuable lesson that day. Never laugh Jeff Jarrett off when he says something, because he's usually right.
Yeah. Who, you know, even way back then, streaming and stuff was just becoming big. So
I'm a little pissed off by it. I'm a little pissed off it took that long, because my favorite show, one of my favorite shows of all time, is Oz. You familiar with Oz?
Yes.
Okay. So they would have these incredible cliffhangers. They'd have to wait a whole freaking week to watch what happens next. And now my son sits down, and in a weekend, he watches the entire six-part series from beginning to end. And I'm like, dude, that, you know, I had to wait. You know, that stuff was. Man, somebody should go look at that again, because that stuff was just some of the edgiest storytelling I've ever seen. And, you know, just these shocking things that would happen at the end of episodes that you just never saw coming. And, you know, like I said, I had to wait. Now, you know, you can just watch the whole series in one sitting. So kind of annoyed by that. I'm sure I'll get over this.
I was the same way. With Band of Brothers, the HBO special that they had done. And then, you know, because again, it was like a 12 or 13 part series, but you only got an hour a week.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix now.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm sitting there and I'm like mad about it, but at the same time, happy about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you understand exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. Cause like, we're that that generation where you had no choice but to wait. You weren't given a choice. Yeah.
I remember telling my oldest son probably 10 years ago. It's 8 years ago. Hey, man, he was like, well, are there any good shows that you used to watch that I could stream and kill a weekend watching? And I said, watch Oz. It's tremendous. And my sister is also friends with one of the actors from the show. So they live in the same social circles. So I'll never forget, he came down 2 days later and said, you're right, that was awesome. I'm like, 2 days? That's all it took? And he was like, yeah, it was great. You know, just binge watched it. And I'm like, well, God, I wish I could have done that.
Yeah, right. I'm in the same boat with you. I feel exactly the same way, David.
Well, we're showing our age, man.
Yeah, I mean, I brought up having my hip replaced already. I'm only 40. Like,
oh, God bless you.
So I still got to do the other side.
That sucks.
Oh, it sucks. Well,
I hope you get to. Hey, text me to when you go to the doctor and let me know what ended up happening. I'm curious.
Oh, I will. The fall wasn't fun. I'm limping and I'm you know, walking with a cane a little bit, but if I walk without it, it's a pretty good limp that I got going on.
Once you settle for the night, I could let you know that in my experiences, vodka works very very well to take the edge off.
Hey, That might happen. That might happen, to be honest with you. Little vodka and soda, I'll be good to go.
There you go. That's all you need. Well, that's not all you need, but it's well, and at the end of the day, when you're sitting there and you don't have to worry about falling down anymore, and you're wrapping up the night trying to figure out how you're going to go to bed, go to sleep through the pain, a couple of vodkas, I'll not going to fix it, but it'll take the edge off.
Yeah, it'll numb the pain a little bit for me, and
There you go.
I'm totally cool with that. David, I want to thank you for taking the time to
Sure.
speak with me today. I had a great
That's
time.
been, yeah, I did too.
Fans, you can get volume one of Sitting Ringside, and you can get volume two of Sitting Ringside, Amazon.com, GuyEvansBooks.com. And if you go to GuyEvansBooks.com, that's where you can go and you can get all sorts of different bundle packages involving David Penzer's Volume 2. And trust me, it's well worth it for what you get. All sorts of posters, autographs. You can even get a Zoom call with David Penzer himself. Completely unheard of when it comes to selling a book. But Guy Evans and David Penzer have gone all out for you guys, the fans. So make sure you go to Amazon.com or GuyEvansBooks.com. David, thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. Again, I had a blast.
Yeah, I did too. I'm not just blowing smoke. I had a great time. So we'll have to do this again someday.
Oh, absolutely. And fans, remember, spoiler freeze, the way to be. We're out.